Good afternoon. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's just about time to take a look at the arts. Today, my guest is Judy Jacoby. She is the Assistant Vice Chancellor of University Art Collections and Special Programs at Purdue. And we're going to discuss a pair of community tours of significant new works of art at Purdue University Northwest Hammond Campus this Saturday, March 25th. Tours are open to the public. They are free of charge. There's going to be two of them, and it's happening on Saturday. So we're going to find out all about the arts as they pertain to Purdue University from a lady that knows her stuff. It's all coming up. Good afternoon, I'm Tom Lounges. It's time to take a look at the arts. As I mentioned before the news, today I've got a very special guest, Judy Jacoby. She is the Assistant Vice Chancellor of Purdue University Art Collections and Special Programs. She will be conducting two tours tomorrow, Saturday, March 25th, at the Purdue University Northwest Hammond Campus. This is free to the public, and there are two tours, and they start in the afternoon, late morning, early afternoon. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about this tour, but we're going to talk more. We're going to talk about the importance of art, sculpture, painting, art in every sense, and how it applies to higher education. Judy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Now, you're a native New Yorker originally, correct?
I am.
How long have you been in this area?
I've been in this area 40 years. So okay. I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else. My first years of my youth were spent in Brooklyn. I'm from Flatbush. And I benefited greatly. It really started me on my most significant interest, which was art. Mm-hmm. I had a grandmother who predated the beatniks by many, many, many decades. They called people like her bohemians.
Okay.
And so she ran with the artists with her sisters, and I lived near her, so I was the beneficiary of her interest in art. I spent many weekends visiting the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Museum of Modern Art, and Greenwich Village.
Greenwich Village is a story unto itself. We should have to do a radio show on that just by itself at some point.
Indeed, and I really could talk a lot about that, from the plays I've seen there to the music acts to the restaurants to McDougal and Bleecker to the New School for Social Research, which was originally the university in exile for people like Albert Einstein in the 40s. So great
stories. There's a lot of stories about Bleecker Street itself.
Yes, indeed.
That's quite a legendary place.
Yes, indeed. And everything you've heard about it is true.
I turned on to some of that stuff. I got into Jack Kerouac in high school, and that took me to Ginsberg and all the different art, you know, boroughs. Mm-hmm. And so I started listening to word jazz and all the beatnik kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you go even past that.
Yeah, well, you know, aside from jazz, I mean, people like Jimi Hendrix started there when he played for Sam and Dave. I remember seeing Blood, Sweat, and Tears the day before they debuted with one of their new singers. I saw the most wonderful play, which I think everyone in America and the world should see, and many probably have, at the Sullivan Street Playhouse, which was called The Fantastics.
Okay.
Right. And saw Jerry Orbach, who many of you know from
Law and Order.
Law and Order. He was actually a Broadway, you know, song and hoofer.
Wow.
So the memories are fantastic. And also dragging my really lousy canvases. I was a terrible painter. lousy. Terrible. In the 60s from my art class with a wonderful artist named Benny Andrews, who was the first African-American artist to have a piece bought for the permanent collection of the Museum of Modern Art and became my art teacher. I was very, very lucky.
So when did you decide, okay, I'm not a great artist myself, but I love art, so I'm going to promote it and educate people about it? When did that vision come, that epiphany?
Well, really, that's a great way of putting it. Epiphany and vision sounds like I had some kind of a plan in mind and you know, the time and the spirit, the zeitgeist, as they call it, the German word, was there. But it was kind of more by accident that I backed myself into a corner that I couldn't come out of, and I'll tell you the story.
Okay.
I was the owner of an ad agency, and Purdue North Central, which is one of the campuses now of Purdue Northwest, the other being Hammond,
which we're going to talk about.
Right. Was one of my clients. I went there on a lovely October day about 18 years ago and saw before me the most gorgeous natural environment. We have 260, 70 acres of beautiful rolling fields. They're planted with beautiful trees. There's natural plantings. There's man-made plantings, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But it had not one piece of art on it. And I thought, I had in my earlier years, when I was in advertising, decided that I needed to, frankly, generate another stream of revenue, and I started to rep sculptors because they could do their sculpture and their art.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't market it. You know, you can do one or the other.
It's hard to sell art and make a living at it. It really is.
Oh, it's incredibly difficult. So I came up with the idea of putting an art collection there. And the chancellor then was very interested in it. In fact, he was very enthusiastic. I love art. I love contemporary sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, we don't have a dime to buy it. And I said, how about if we rent it? And that's how I started. To this day, we still lease or rent the vast majority of pieces we have.
Wow.
We've had well over 100 pieces. You're looking at a book now of the pieces that we had over the first 10 years. We've now been in this business for 18 years, and now, believe it or not, about 15 of those sculptures belong to us. We have had pieces donated. We have had pieces underwritten. More than a decade ago, we did buy a few pieces because they became icons, like Odysseus or Ulysses on the
Which
pond.
Which is on the cover of the
Right, the
of
Odyssey,
book.
The trip, the travel, the journey that you take when you go to college and in life. Others we have received as part of gifts. One of the groups of these sculptures were five, some of which are in that book, and they were part of an over $1 million contribution of art that we got some 9 years ago. So, you know, people say, how did you do it? It looks so beautiful. Well,
mm-hmm.
you do it over years, and it's all about developing relationships. It's just like anything else in business. People do business with people.
Has the community itself, the businesses, the neighbors around it, realized how much it's enhanced the property and the visual? Do they support it? Do you see businesses saying, we want to underwrite it?
Well, absolutely. And I'll tell you how that works. I have a drive-by gallery, if you will, on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
So every year we change a number of the pieces. And so everybody knows where we are and who we are. And the community essentially loves them. I don't go out and ask corporations to support the art. I don't want to undermine the university's major needs. I can do it without major support.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at this point now, so I don't want to cannibalize other efforts. We need money okay. for academic programs. We need money for scholarships. A lot of our students live close or near, very near the poverty level. Most of our students are still the children of their first generation college goers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are all kinds of accessibility issues. We want them to be successful. They've got to get to us. So this program hasn't really cost very much money at all. The leases, which are minimal, when we renew leases, that's also minimal. And the art that I am now collecting for both campuses, but especially for the Hammond campus, because we've just started that effort, that's all donations.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's clarify what Purdue is. Now, mm-hmm. when I was coming out of high school in the 70s, I went to Purdue Calumet.
Right.
And, of course, there's Purdue Lafayette. And now we're seeing Purdue North, Purdue IU combinations. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear the word Purdue a lot. Mm-hmm. And a lot mm-hmm. of times it's in conjunction with IU.
Right.
Which I also attended for a while. Yeah. But they used to be like rivals. And yeah. now it's like everybody's all kumbaya.
Well, you know, rivalry lasts perhaps only as long as it's valuable. And sometimes that's bottom line. And sometimes it's, you know, duplication of programs. Do we need this kind of duplication? And places like IU Purdue and IU Fort Wayne, IU Purdue Fort Wayne, have been coupled for a long time. Here, what we did in Northwest Indiana was we unified the two campuses, one in Hammond, which is known as Cal,
mm-hmm.
and one in Westville, which was known as PNC. And now we are Purdue Northwest. And there were a lot of very important reasons for doing that. Number one, we can cut down on duplication. Okay, that saves money.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, we really need to be a strong force. We are in great part funded by the state. There are lots of funding avenues, but one of them is state. And the state is where we derive the power to get the money, whether it's sheer dollars and cents, or we float bonds, educational bonds,
mm-hmm.
to get the money, the support we need to build buildings. So some of our buildings are so old that you can't even update them, okay? And the technologies have grown so fast that you're losing incredible speed in keeping your university current.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, at the vanguard, meaning ahead of the curve. So this gives us, as a bigger university with now almost 15,000 students, now with more than 50 majors, now with more than 10 and growing numbers of grad programs, this gives us the ability to be a stronger force and move us up the food chain
mm-hmm.
In the legislature to get what we need. Okay.
So streamline, cut the fat, and focus on what your goals are that you need
right.
for today's market.
Right, and the future.
And the
future. I mean, we are all about graduating the best students who are world-ready
mm-hmm.
and can meet the demands of industry, particularly in our region. Most of our students want to stay in our region, and we want to make that possible. So we have to work closely with economic development forces. We have to look at the health of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at the value and the goodness and the academic strength of our programs. And we have to make sure our students, exceed our requirements. I am very impressed with the students I've met, for instance, having been now at Hammond's campus.
Is that where you're positioned now?
I'm in both campuses.
Okay.
I'm positioned wherever I can have a key to find the art and also schlep the art. That's an old word from Brooklyn, to get it where it has to be. I work with two people who help me do a magnificent job of planning where we're going to put things. You know, when you are, to put it bluntly, a beggar, not a chooser,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting all of this art based on the relationships I have with artists, many of whom are older. They want to see their legacy continue in the visual sense.
Right.
We don't always plan our exhibits like a corporation does. Now, I might add to that, thank God, we don't want this to be like a corporate collection.
Mm-hmm.
We want this to evolve, be organic, and every week there's a different surprise. And so you have to have people who know.
Do you rotate the art because so much comes in?
We do rotate some of the art.
All right.
You know, we have pieces that are so enormous, 10 by 10 feet. For instance, we have two pieces that are diptychs. That means they are each two pieces, and they're totally each 10 by 10 feet. when we put them up, guess what? They're going to stay.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of art that we are moving back and forth. We need to leave it in its place, usually for about a year or so. Sometimes we do things for 6 months. But in order to get a good flow of people and give enough tours so that people who view the art understand the art, our movement is careful. Mm-hmm. It's carefully planned. Our art collection is vastly different one end of the continuum to the other. We have mostly modern and contemporary art.
But looking at the book, it definitely seems that way.
Uh-huh.
And exactly. I mean, there are some things, when you say understand the art, there's a few things in here that look like, well, there was one in particular, I can't find it now, but mm-hmm. looked like steel girders from a building
mm-hmm.
that were kind of bent in weird shapes.
It was.
I'm looking at going, mm-hmm. okay, what is that?
Well, it's an abstract piece. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more you talk to artists, especially modern artists, who are in the abstract, they're not doing recognizable, realistic, and figurative work, the more you talk to them, the more you hear their answer about, well, what is that?
Mm-hmm. What do you think it is?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what it is. I want you to talk about
the,
what
whole,
you think
the whole
it is.
Adage of the art is in the eye of the beholder.
Yes, and that makes it extremely interesting. Over the many years, I've given tours to adults, to thousands of children. You know, one of the ideas of having art in a campus is to bring people there when they're young. You know, we know from research, from marketing research, that children start to make emotional connections with universities when they're 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
How unusual is it to hear that a kid wants to play for Notre Dame? It's not unusual. How unusual is it for a child to say, I'm an Ohio State person? You know, they're living with parents.
Right.
They've got all sports, brings that to the fore as well. And the other thing is, we have to put college on the horizon, make it visible, tangible, or else, again, if these kids are first generation college goers, mm-hmm. they may not have the support monetarily or really in their backgrounds to start fighting for their right to party.
Right.
And put that's big quotes, okay? Because their parents don't want them to party.
Right.
And in fact, that's one of the good things about going to school near home. Okay.
Is you focus more on the education than
you
the party.
You do. Yeah. You don't have to worry about where
that's
dinner is
going to be. That's one of the reasons I went.
Right.
I went to IUN. I went to Purdue, right. Cal. With Purdue, mm-hmm. let's touch briefly mm-hmm. on the actual curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue is well known for its engineering, its mm-hmm. science, its mm-hmm. medical, a lot of nursing.
Mm-hmm.
What is the arts program like mm-hmm. at Purdue? I know I went to IUN mm-hmm. when I went there for a year because I wanted to pursue theater. And they had a great theater program with a guy named Garrett Cope, who I studied with.
Right. Well,
Purdue didn't offer that.
No, because when the legislature sought to create the schools, the idea was that one school would be meeting the recommendations of what was called the Morrill Act, M-O-R-Y-L, which actually came about, I think, in the 1860s,
mm-hmm.
I think when President Lincoln was the head of our wonderful country. And the Morrill Act gave land and support to schools that would teach people how to understand the technological and the agricultural. That's what Purdue focused on first.
Okay.
Technological, of course, developing into
the sciences,
right? Our ag department, second to none, probably. And then IU was given the other emphases. It wasn't mm-hmm. the kind of
the humanities.
Land grant college, right? That is not to say that both don't have both.
Mm-hmm.
We have plenty of departments of humanities. And in fact, it's even more important to keep our corner in the humanities, our corner of power, as well as in the sciences. Everything in the world is not about science, technology, engineering, and math,
mm-hmm.
as we hear the STEM.
The STEM.
Yeah.
A lot of STEM stuff on the news right now.
Right. I like to hear STEAM, the A in there, the mm-hmm. arts, right? In fact, we have a camp called the STEAM Camp. But the point is that we do offer humanities, and the arts are one of the reasons that we do offer the humanities. We don't believe you can graduate world-ready students without their knowing and having experienced the humanities, okay, the great ideas of civilization, they came from the humanities. Certainly we had wonderful scientific leaps and all the information, you know, I mean, Gutenberg and the and print, Marconi and the
radio,
right, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, my God, and the information age, computers, right. So these are, but the ideas of humanities are essential to the balanced development of a society. We don't have art departments, studio art departments per se. We have creative arts. We have communication. So there's an opportunity to study about these things, but that's one of the major reasons we want to bring art to everybody. We do not have any exhibition spaces. In other words, I don't have an exhibit hall. I don't have places that are segregated from the general university space for art. I want it everywhere. If they'd let me put it in the bathrooms, I'd put it in the bathrooms.
Well, a lot of this, the pieces that we're looking at here are outdoor pieces. How does the adverse climate here affect?
Is there
a requirement of what it has to be made of?
Well, these are all public sculptures, and that word public implies that they are made to
withstand.
Yes, okay. Yes. And we've had one or two natural disasters. We had a piece that's in that book called Eye Candy, and it was made out of a 3M film. Sort of looks like the stuff that you use to wrap a gift if you really know how to wrap a gift.
Okay.
I'm not in that ballpark. And we knew that that was going to be challenging because it looked like a big fat piece of candy right on Highway 421. It made it through the winter. It made it through the fall. It made it through the spring. In the winter, the moisture froze inside. It looked a little different. It was gorgeous until 9 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago, on I think it was August 26th, when a straight-ahead, very high wind, it's called a derecho, even though in Spanish that means to the right, the real phrase is todo derecho, straight ahead. It was 100 miles an hour. And as I went down to the shelter, I looked at Eye Candy.
It's flying over.
And I said, bye-bye, because an hour later when we were up, came up, it was just mangled. Our vice chancellor of finance at that time, and now of administration and finance, Steve Turner, said, it looks like goldfish in a blender. And indeed it did. And I remember calling the artist and saying, I'm so sorry, but this is unfortunate. He said, hey, we made it through, you know, three seasons. And the best story, the best story is that he used the piece when it was in its glory for his new portfolio. He was a young artist and did three public pieces with us and then ended up getting a $100,000 commission from the city of Chicago, the CTA. So, you know, we did take chance on, and we still do take chances on young sculptors, because guess what? There are a lot of them and very few galleries, the supply of artists.
And to say you're on campus at Purdue is
a big deal.
Feather in their cap.
Of course, of
it's
course.
Great on the resume.
Of course. And you know, you have a visual portfolio, and it's wonderful.
Do you reject a lot of art?
Let's put it this way. We curate our art. We don't want to be given art that really can't make an impact. So, yeah, we do reject art. But we don't reject a lot of it because we don't put calls out, wide calls. What we do is we're introduced to artists whose work we've accepted and to other artists.
Okay. So you do a little research before you open that
door.
Oh,
I do a tremendous amount of research. And research is easier to do because of the web. And then, word travels and then people get in touch with us.
All right. Let's talk about this tour that's happening tomorrow. You've got two of them. Now, again, we're talking a lot right now about the outdoor public art, but I'm seeing in the brochure paintings and different things. So will the tour take them in buildings, out buildings, all over the campus?
Well, we're going to concentrate on the inside in the Student Union Library Building in Hammond. Number one.
That's an old building.
That's an old building, but the art has made it newer. It is so beautiful. We have very dramatic art there on every single floor. We've taken the library and we've made it a focal point for art. I would say we have probably about 55 pieces of art inside.
These all tabletop type? arts?
No. Okay. These are flat 2D.
Okay.
We do have a number of sculptures in the library. We've even taken glass display cabinets. You know, people used to do, cabinets with displays. We don't do that anymore because you have so many other ways of telling people what you're doing. You don't have to, slide open the 90-pound doors and mm-hmm. cut out and put all this garbage in them. So we have now changed them into shows as well. So we have 55, 60 pieces of art to show. Some are in groups. We're going to concentrate there because A, it might rain, and mm-hmm. B, we thought of that. It's a great place to start. And we're going to have a reception after each of the tours. We are going to make it easy for people. If you can walk up the stairs, it's very little walking. If you'd rather take the elevator, we even have student ambassadors to accompany you so you don't go to ladies' lingerie on the 7th floor, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So we will have guides. A number of the artists will be there to talk about their work, which I think is very critical.
Now, are these just local artists, or are they coming in from all over the country?
No, we have artists that are local, regional. We have artists from Chicago. And then we have work from, for instance, Christo and Jean-Claude, who are international artists. And they gave us a gift a number of years ago, which we have brought over, official photos of 12 of their works from the last 40 years. And I have a lot to talk about in regards to them. So that's going to be the nature of it. And then everybody's going to get a charming beret as a memento.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, we'll all be together in the lovely room with a view in the Student Union Library building.
Now, if the weather mm-hmm. is good, will you be doing a little more outdoor?
We do. Happily, we have 7 sculptures on a lovely path that is between the Student Union Library building and the other buildings. So we have these small tours, mm-hmm. and people can guide themselves from one sculpture to another. Every single sculpture, you can do that tour probably in 10 minutes on your own, maybe
15. Some of these are really beautiful. It'd be
They're
a shame
gorgeous.
Not to be able to see.
Yeah.
I really like the Boundless.
Oh, everybody loves that.
It's a man with chains and he's pulling free.
Yeah.
It just speaks to you.
Yes, it does. He's made of chains, 600 feet of chains. And you're right, he's pulling free. With boundless energy. So you may think, well, he's bound from freedom, but he's boundless by the spirit and his will.
To me, when I look at that, I think of education. I think, you're yeah. setting yourself free by coming to campus.
Absolutely.
That's my visual of it, interpret.
Well, that is a great way of interpreting it. In fact, it's very dramatic and it's life-size. So the person there, the figure may look like he is in shackles, but we can all pull powerfully mm-hmm. away from that which binds us.
Now, there's 2 tours. One is at 11 a.m. and one mm-hmm. is at 12:30 p.m.
Right.
These are free, all
Absolutely.
Ages. You can bring the family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's nothing that you wouldn't want your kids to see. They have to be patient.
Right.
Because the tour will take somewhere between 45, 50 minutes. We have to sort of do a give and take because in the library we'll have a number of artists because so much work is there. And we do want people to have an explanation,
okay.
but then interact with the artists. One of them is very interesting. She's a poet, rather an artist laureate of the state of Illinois, and she is one of America's itinerant artists doing historical art. And her name is Kay Smith, and she is she has brought us 15 of her watercolors, all of which were done on site. And to add to the reach of them, she has had the pictures and her own narrative put in her own words.
Mm-hmm.
put on line so that you can actually swipe your phone with the code.
Wow.
Or you can just type in a few letters in a browse bar, and you can go and hear what the picture is in her own words. That's amazing.
Again, this is tomorrow, so mm-hmm. you're going to need to make plans now, folks.
Yeah.
It's at Purdue University Northwest, which is the old Purdue Cal, for those of us that are mm-hmm. old school. Mm-hmm. And it's free.
It's free. You know, when you know where the SULB, the building is, it's the biggest building right off of 173rd. If you come off of Indianapolis or you come off of Kennedy, it's the building with the giant parking lot.
Right.
Giant parking lot.
Which is always good, especially if it's raining.
Right. Don't let the rain.
11 a.m. it starts. Now, is that when the actual tour starts? What time should they arrive?
Really, if you want to get on the first tour, probably about 10:30.
Okay.
Because they're limited, there are limited spaces. Some of our honor students, some other students are coming. We didn't have reservations, so it's catch as catch can. Then the second tour is 12:30. Between 11 and 12, we'll have the tour. 12 to 12:30, we'll be able to enjoy
now,
eating.
Now, let's say you still have a bunch of people that want to see it. Would you do a third tour?
I would do a third tour. Okay. Not sure there'll be any asparagus unclute left, but I would do a third tour.
Well, that's important, too. There are some appetizers available.
They're really going to be good. And the other thing is that I will do tours anytime for a group of people. You can just call Purdue, the main number, and ask for Judy the Art Lady. That's how people remember
Judy
me.
The Art Lady.
You connect with the Art Lady because I'll do tours for anybody. I'll customize them.
So if there's a service group or something
Absolutely.
That wants to, a senior home, whatever.
Listen, we do tours not infrequently for scouting groups who are seeking their merit badge in fine arts.
Wow.
Why not? Right.
Now, do you do them at both campuses?
Absolutely.
This one is in Hammond, but do you do them at
Absolutely.
Both?
Absolutely. 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 Yeah. We have people of all ages come. Let's see. The person who came from far away, we had a person from Shanghai come to the tour. We had architecture students from Paris who came to Montreal, then came down to Oak Park to see, of course, Frank Lloyd Wright's home and mm-hmm. studio, and then heard that there were some John Lloyd Wright buildings, that's
I'm
Frank Lloyd Wright's son,
okay.
in Michigan City, mostly on the lake. So they came there. Then they heard we had a Frank Lloyd Wright exhibit at PNC. They found their way there. We had a brochure at their motel.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we met, we fed them lunch, and we said, what are you doing now? And they said, well, we heard there's a Frank Lloyd Wright house in West Lafayette. And I said, yeah. And they said, how could we make arrangements to go there? I said, I'll get John Christian on the line. He lives there. He's one of the last five people in the world, he's since died, who lives in a house that Frank Lloyd Wright designed for him
mm-hmm.
and his wife a million years ago. Actually, they moved into it in right after Frank Lloyd Wright died. I think it was 1959
Isn't
or 60.
Isn't there one on the dunes, part of the World Fair? Wasn't one of those of Frank Lloyd Wright?
No, that wasn't. No,
okay.
No. But those are three very interesting houses.
Right.
Right, right indeed. Right. The Houses of Tomorrow, they were called. And they were brought across the lake and then also on the highways. So they ended up going. I called John Christian and they literally jumped in their car. He said, well, how long will it take them to be here? I said, well, about 88 minutes. And they drove right down. And he was so thrilled to give them a tour. It's a fabulous house. And you can visit it now because it's now a foundation. It's called Samara, S-A-M-A-R-A, which means the pine cone seed. If you open a pine cone, each little piece, there is a seed. And so
mm-hmm.
It's a winged seed. It kind of flies, sort of like a
helicopter.
You drop it and it flies down. And so he did this house called Samara. And they drove down and he spent the afternoon with them and he took them to dinner.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, the stories of people coming and visiting, every single tour is different. I never get bored. And kids come up with the most amazing observations. And I want them to come again and again because every year they come, you would be amazed at how much they remember. They remember the names of sculptures.
Are there always new ones each season, too?
Yes. We do have, I would say, cornerstone pieces that are now ours. I would say about más o menos 10 have been given to us. We got five from the George Sugarman Foundation, and another five or ten have been given to us. So those we keep where they are or move them mm-hmm. occasionally. So, I mean, we have, between the two schools now, we have 50 pieces. And one of them, by the way, is a piece of the World Trade Center.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, do you rotate between campuses, too?
Well, the sculptures, we will begin doing that, yes. Probably some of the 7 sculptures that are at Hammond. Some of them will come to us. Hammond will get some of ours. And then the curator will want to see pieces on his own. In the main, mostly that's what he'll do.
Judy, we've got just a couple minutes left. Is there anything we have not talked about that you want to let people know regarding tomorrow's tour?
Well, I think that it's not to be missed. It's the first time we've ever done this. We'd love to have a great turnout. We have room for about 45 people per each round.
Tour. Okay.
I'll do an extra tour if there are that many people.
But don't expect appetizers.
Right. And I will also be happy to give you my cards. I have an assistant who will take your names. We'll follow up. We can do tours. We have bookings for 6 months ahead.
Okay. So they can call either campus, ask
right.
for the art lady.
Right. The
and
art
schedule
lady.
A group tour.
Absolutely. A group
of either
tour.
Campus.
Either campus. We like to take between 6 and 40 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, again, we were mentioning this book, and there's a beautiful picture of you in this book and a little bio, and there's some great art pictures. Tell me about the book real quick. Will they be able to buy this at the campus tomorrow?
We do have a limited number. They're expensive. They're $50.
Wow.
Because we designed this ourselves on mypublisher.com, and then we had it printed by them, and it's a small run. So they're very expensive. But what we're planning on doing is incorporating all of these works into a website. We had a website presence, but now we're developing a new one. So the best way to see this is really to come and see it. And that's the way to enjoy it in person. But when tourists come, I certainly share the book so people can see the collection. And we do have some wonderful DVDs which people can see to recall the pieces.
All right. And there is a website as well where people can view some of the art?
We are working on that right now. We
will it
have
be
a
like
new
a virtual
one.
Tour?
No, probably not. Probably okay. not. Probably not. But it will outline the pieces, who did them, and the concepts behind them. That's the best part about seeing art on a tour. We don't hyper-analyze the aesthetics. We talk about the concepts, what the artist had in mind. And if they didn't have in mind, what do you have in mind?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one thing to see a painting. It's another thing to make a painting. And I know quite a bit about technique and concepts, and it's just interesting. All the stories are compelling. Some of them are sad. Some of them are dramatic. Some of them are downright funny, quite frankly.
And some of these will definitely make you stand there and scratch your head, because I'm looking at some of these pictures going, all right, what did he mean when he made this?
Yeah.
And I think that's the best part of art.
The best part. There's always a good reason.
Again, it's in the eye of the beholder, and you can behold it tomorrow, Saturday, March 25th. It is at Purdue University Northwest in Hammond at the Student Union Building and the Trail in Between buildings. You'll see some of the outside artwork, and mm-hmm. Judy Jacoby will be your personal guide.
Thank you. We'll meet you at the Welcome Center in Student Union.
All right. That's tomorrow. All right. We're going to take a slight pause here. And do we have a pause to take? Pause?
Sure, sure.
Pause is the key word there. Pause.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So, all right. We've got a second half coming
up. That's a
up.
Great tease, Tom.
That is a great tease.
People are going to be surprised.
I'm clever. I'm the master of segue.
Yeah.
We had a recent guest here, and we're going to air this. This is a pre-recorded segment that we did with Corporal Simon Gresser and Scout, and it's a big fundraiser going on tonight, Friday, at the Apple County Line Apple Orchard in Hobart, 200 South County Line Road, and it's a fundraiser for the Hobart Canine Department. So, all right, we're going to shift gears just a little bit. Tonight at the Hobart County Line Orchard at 200 South County Line Road, there's a very special event going on to help the Hobart Canine Police Unit. So this is a little bit different than what we normally do on A Look at the Arts, but that's okay. We've got Corporal Simon Gresser and Scout. Scout is a Hobart Police canine officer, and they're with us today to talk about canine training and what the canines bring to the community as far as law enforcement and how they protect and serve, and then how the public can help, because in Hobart, there is a big event going on that I'm happy to be emceeing with and a part of, and it's a big fundraiser. And with that, Simon, tell us a little bit about what this event is about.
Basically, what we're doing is our canine unit at Hobart Police Department runs off through donations. So the monies that we collect throughout the year help us out with purchasing of new police dogs, also allowing our officers to be able to get further training and experience and equipment. So a lot of dogs eventually will work their way to retirement, and so this also helps offset some costs for the retired dogs when they get old and need some medical attention, mm-hmm. and this will help the handlers that still keep their dogs at the end, too. So the monies that we collect throughout this also just help go to basically goes towards the canine unit for equipment, maintaining their proficiencies, mm-hmm. and also the handler.
Now, so Scout is your dog. He's a beautiful, giant, black German Shepherd, right?
Yes.
Which I'm going to post some pictures on our Lakeshore Public Radio Facebook page so listeners out there can see what he looks like. Beautiful guy. He was just sitting on a chair in here. He's probably ready to be interviewed as well. When Scout's ready to retire, he goes and retires with you?
Yes. Most of the times the dogs will retire with the handler. Mm-hmm. In the event that it does not go back with the handler, we will find either a close friend, family, somebody within the police department that understand what these dogs are about and the training that goes with them. Mm-hmm. So we try to keep them definitely with their families, but in some situations, handlers may get another dog and it'll be too much for the home at times. Mm-hmm. And
well, can you talk a little bit about the training that goes into making a dog like Scout, a German Shepherd, into a police officer?
Absolutely. Usually what happens is the dogs are selected from a vendor or a broker. The dogs are tested and make sure they have the ability to do police work. Once they come into the canine unit, here at Hobart, we're a little bit unique. We do a lot of our self in-house training. I'm a master trainer with the American Police Canine Association, so I'm able to certify and train police dogs now. So my guys will, at our department, will report to me, mm-hmm. And they will spend at least the minimum amount of time is about 5 weeks. So roughly at the end of their training, we're going to have about 400 hours in patrol work. Patrol consists of tracking, area searches, article searches for people, obedience, also handler protection and aggression. So that's kind of what the patrol side of things are when it comes to the police dog. And then not only that, we have detection is another probably 200 to 300 hours in mm-hmm. just detection work. And our detection at Hobart is all drug related. So mm-hmm. our dogs are all drug dogs. And we have 5 dogs in our program, so all 5 dogs are drug dogs.
But there are dogs trained for explosives and cadavers and mm-hmm. all the other things
Absolutely.
That are out there. Do you train them in those areas as well?
I just started working with some explosive detection dogs. I'm actually trying to work my way to get my certificate for explosive detection dog trainer, too.
Sure.
So I'm in the process of doing that now.
What's interesting about Scout, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he's the first full-time police dog in a school system, at least in this area. Is that correct?
Some years ago, they've had a dog assigned to a school corporation. I wouldn't say we're the first one in the
it's
area,
certainly unique.
But it's definitely different. I mean, it's been a long time since they've had a dog in the schools, just for the simple fact of funding. Mm-hmm. Funding's the number one issue when it comes to school cities and not only the police department. So what I recall, since I've been in canine for close to 18 years, Fort Wayne School District was, I believe, one of the first of putting dogs inside the schools for a full-time position. So, yes, it is unique to have us in there. We are assigned to the school city of Hobart. This is a start, or I'm actually coming to the end of my third year at the school with Scout.
Now, what's different about the police dogs today versus the police dogs we see of the 60s, where they're very aggressive, mm-hmm. is he's trained in a passive manner. Is that correct? So the parents don't need to worry about, oh, there's this big German Shepherd in our school, because he gets along very well with the students. I've seen him in action. But it's a passive, non-aggressive kind of thing.
Scout is still a patrol dog, so yeah, we've trained him to do the aggression side of things. But mm-hmm. the thing what comes with in the canine industry now is the selection process, and not only that, the genetics in the dogs are much more different than they were you know, years ago. Like you said before, they back in the 60s and 70s, you look for that big, mean dog mm-hmm. that was tied off to the tree and go, yep, that's going to be a good police dog or right. a military dog. Unfortunately now, you know, that it's come to that point now where there's a lot of liability. I'm just going to throw that out right. there.
Yeah, and, sure. Yeah.
You know, so we have to make sure we test dogs now with very sound nerves. And, you know, it's all about meeting good brokers mm-hmm. and that understand dogs. And then now we're able to get that next generation of police work dog.
I can imagine it. You really do have to choose or find dogs that are capable of that because
Absolutely.
There's, you know, there's. You could be, a dog could potentially be in a situation where there's a lot of loud gun noise or just bangs and stuff right. that could really throw them off.
As Tom well knows, I mean, in a passing period at the Hobart High School, you're having 1,100 to 1,300 kids pass
yeah,
at one time.
That's a lot.
So it's like I tell people, it's like swimming upstream.
Mm-hmm.
So to see a large group of people coming mm-hmm. at you, it takes a dog with very strong nerves to be able to handle
sure.
and manipulate through that without having any accidentals,
right.
bites, for example.
Now, I remember about a year or two ago, I did a big piece in the Times on Scout because uh-huh. it was a pretty unique situation, and I was substitute teaching there, and I got to know him a little bit, and it's interesting to see how the kids gravitate to him. I mean, it's kind of a neat thing because you've got kids that, you know, there's bullying and all these other things going on, mm-hmm. but they seem to take to Scout and to Simon in almost a counselor kind of way.
Right.
And that's kind of unique.
It is. It's, you know, when I took the position at the school, I came in already having an edge on it because everybody loves dogs. Majority
mm-hmm,
of people
sure.
love dogs. Mm-hmm. So they might not know my name, but majority of the kids know Scout's name. And they, like you said, they gravitate to the dog. So right away, it's the icebreaker. You know, the barriers come down. They start talking to the dog. They start petting him. And mm-hmm. then pretty soon, you know, the kids are telling their whole story without me even saying one word.
Sure.
Right? You know, so it is very special thing. It's a very powerful thing.
Almost
to
like
have
a therapy dog.
It is.
As well as a police dog.
And, yeah, I've been nicknamed that now amongst my comrades. You know, so, yeah, we're but now the therapy dog handlers.
How have you seen the positive side besides that with having a dog full-time in school? Are you seeing a lot less drugs being brought into school? Because you'd have to be pretty stupid to say, well, we have a full-time police dog,
right?
So I'm
going right.
to bring drugs.
Especially
you know.
One who is as big as a Scout. I would not want to get on his bad side.
Yeah, it is definitely curved. I mean, we have information and data that shows that since we've been put into schools, you know, we've curbed a lot of it. You know, mm-hmm. unfortunately, you're still going to have kids make dumb mistakes,
right?
And
yeah.
And try to test their limits. And in this case, you know, Scout will find it, you know,
right.
and
yeah.
test their limits, you know. Yeah. So the nose knows,
sure,
you know. And
if you want to see Scout in action, you can do that this Friday at the County Line Orchard because the fundraiser is going to be there. Scout going to be the actual demonstration dog? Or?
Well, we're going to have a couple of our dogs
okay.
there. Scout will be one that'll be there in the building too that night. We're going to bring a couple dogs in because most of the time people always want to see the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll have them there so people can meet and greet with Scout.
What time is the event starting? Is that on there?
Yeah, 5 to 7.
5 to 7.
Is the canine show, and you're going to have baskets and raffles, mm-hmm. and then you've got comedy, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. That starts at 7 and takes us through into the evening hours.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's at the County Line Orchard, which is right there on County Line Road, right between Hobart and Portage, and a beautiful facility if you've never been there. Now, you do have to be 21 to attend.
Mm-hmm.
It is there is going to be a bar, I'm assuming, since
yes.
you're going to be 21.
Yes,
okay.
There will be alcohol there.
And let's talk about the canine show itself. What kind of things will we see, and how many dogs are you planning on?
We'll have 2 or 3 dogs there in the unit. We're probably doing some drug detection demonstration, showing you how the dogs are going to detect and how they alert on the drugs. And not only that, we'll talk and show you guys the change in behaviors of the dog. Of course, there's going to be a little bit of obedience that will be seen in there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, we just keep the aggression side out of it. Just because it just takes up a little bit more time. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of people like to see the aggression part of it, but, you know, on this
Well, I've seen a couple where you put the big, like,
big suit,
suit
on.
You look like the Michelin
yeah,
man.
Exactly.
And the dogs will just go yeah. to town.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Sure.
It scares me to watch it. Yeah. I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. I would not want to be even inside that suit when you
yeah.
see some of these dogs do their job. How many dogs did you say Hobart has? 5?
We have 5 now. Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. We have dogs from their Dutch Shepherd, we have a Belgian Malinois, and we have 3 German Shepherds.
How hard are the different breeds to train?
You know, as long as they have the work that they want to do, I mean, it's you can train just about any dog to do it, as long as they have the genetics and what takes place.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll, we're usually good. But my heart is with the German Shepherd. I give a lot of guys some business when they have their Malinois and their Dutch Shepherds because they're just a little bit more of a drivier type of dog, more energetic. But the German Shepherd's always kind of like loyal, mm-hmm. you know, easygoing, the guy, easy to train.
Sure. I can't get over Scout. I'm going to put a picture up of both of you guys on our Facebook page once this segment is done. I've never seen a dog more well trained and just kind of polite, but also huge, huge.
He's a big dog.
Yeah,
we had the dog from Annie in here.
Much different.
Much different dog. Yeah. And an actor dog. It should know when to bark on cue, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. Will he make a noise if you tell him to?
Yeah, usually he'll sound off.
I hate to bother him. He's really kind of resting.
I know. I feel like we're...
Yeah.
You want to say something, Scout? Right.
Pass off. Pass off. Pass off. Pass off. Pass off.
No.
Pass off. Pass off. Good. Pass off.
There you go.
There he is.
Loud and proud.
Yeah.
Now, what were you saying? In what language was that?
Pass off is in German to speak or to bark.
Does he understand English?
You know, a couple of the commands are in English. He knows when I'm mad.
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
How's that?
Well, here every time he comes up to me, I'm like, hey, Scout, how are you? I'm talking to him. He's probably looking at me like, who are you and what are you saying?
I speak German, Tom. Come on. Is there a reason why you train him in German as opposed to English or any other language?
It usually has to come in where the dogs are imported from. So they're usually imported from somewhere in Europe. So we've had dogs from Czechoslovakia. We speak Czech, Dutch, you know.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, depending on where they're imported from.
What was it about canines that drew you as a police officer? Why is that your niche? Why is that your wheelhouse?
You know, everybody finds their thing in law enforcement. You know, a lot of guys are traffic guys. I was fortunate enough in the beginning of my career and got asked to be put in the canine unit. I've always had a dog in my life.
Sure.
And, you know, it's unconditional love. Like, I tell people this, like, well, you stick this dog in the trunk of a car, you stick your spouse, you know, your loved one in the trunk of the car at the same time. You wait a little while, open that trunk up, which one's happy to see you?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think we may have to practice
you
that.
Know?
Right.
So, yeah, it's unconditional love, and it's true. No matter what kind of day it is, if it's raining, snowing, hot, they're ready to come to work, you know, and they're sincere.
Goes home with you then.
Oh yeah, he lives with me and my family. I have a wife and a son, and my son's at the high school, and he interacts with them, and his friends interact with them. So he's just part of the.
That must be a really great feeling family. To know that you are at your son's high school as well, and Scout's there. He must enjoy that. You must enjoy that.
Oh yeah, yep. And it's nice because I've been part of these kids' lives from coaching baseball to so it's pretty nice to be a part of that and to see them and like. Tom was saying earlier, the kids just really come up to him. They don't come to see me a lot of times. They just come. I've got a bunch of dog walkers. They want to take them for walks to school now and all kinds
of stuff. Scout's got his own office. It's a little one. They share an office together.
Nice. His name's on the door.
Let's talk a little bit about this event again. We've got a few minutes left. The fundraiser is, again, Friday, March 24th. It starts at 5 o'clock. Doors open. Baskets, raffles, a canine show from 5 to 7. A comedy show. Now, these are not local comedians. These are guys from, you said, Comedy Central. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe some of them have been a part of Comedy Central, yes.
Wow. So, Dobie Maxwell, Jerry Donovan, and Steve Ayat. Ayat. Mm-hmm. How long will they each be performing?
Usually they're going to do like maybe 45 minutes, 55 minutes.
Each?
So it's, yeah.
Wow,
so
it's a long night.
Yeah, so it'll be right around there. Sometimes they go maybe a little over. Mm-hmm. So we'll manage that as it goes through. But
how many years have you been doing this particular fundraiser?
I believe this is, we were just talking about it. I think this is going to be our fifth or sixth year doing this.
Always at the Orchard and always comedy?
We've traveled and gone to different venues, the Elks Club.
Which is no more.
Yes, that's correct.
Sadly.
That's right. The Ambassador, we've had it. And I think one of the first years we did it was at the County Line Orchard, which is just a big draw in itself. The County Line Orchard is a big barn. It's beautiful. A lot of parking, and there's plenty of room. I think we've got some sound issues that are taken care of this year, so I'm not going to have any issues.
I hope
with
so. Let's knock on wood.
it's been a good thing for us. It's a good draw for those guys that have cabin fever. It's nice to get out, and it's a good night, good entertainment, I've never had any really no complaints. Everybody says
it always
keep
comedy?
Doing it. We've always done comedy.
That's kind first of a year, unique we, niche.
Yeah, we first started off with Disposable Theater Group was our ones that we first were doing it. They do improv.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really good to us and whatnot. And then we ended up going into some stand-up because it was something different. So this is like, I think, our second or third year with stand-up.
And once again, if you just joined us, what is this fundraiser helping? It's helping the retirement dogs, injured dogs?
It's actually helping just the Hobart Canine Unit in general.
The whole program.
It's going to go into the general fund of it. And it helps us buy new dogs, take care of the retired dogs, buy equipment, get further training for my guys to be able to go and bring more good stuff back to our canine unit to help the community out.
Hope you have a great turnout out there.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, again, how can people go? Is there a website people can go to find out more information?
If you go on Facebook, Facebook is where we basically go off for everything. If you go to Hobart Canine, it's right there on it. You're going to see a list of all the baskets. The raffle items are on there. It'll have some times and the location and stuff like that.
Once again, that's tonight at the Hobart County Line Orchard, 200 South County Line Road. Doors open at 5 p.m. The comedy starts at 7 p.m. Between all that, you get the canine demonstration and lots of other stuff. So perhaps I'll see you there. Once again, thank you, Corporal Gresser and Scout, for taking time today. And good luck this evening. Well, that's it for A Look at the Arts. Stay with us. Dan Clark's got all kinds of fun stuff coming up this afternoon.
That's right. We're going to have Here and Now starting just after your news headlines here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
All right, we're going to shift gears.